Hello there, and welcome to KDL's Stump the Librarian podcast, where your friendly neighborhood librarians put their research skills to the test to answer questions from you, the listener, or your pet dog, or your bus driver. I'm Jill, and I'm here with Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Jill.
We love answering your questions, so please send them to us at kdl.org/stump or email us at stumpthelibrarian@kdl.org. We'd love to hear from you. We would love it if you followed the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. When you follow and like our podcast, more people can find us. All right, here's the top of the pod question. It's May 1st. Liz, yeah. What's your favorite thing about spring?
Oh, it's spring. My birthday is in spring, so maybe that's my favorite. One time, my birthday was on the same day as Easter,
ooh,
which was like, it was kind of exciting.
That is
exciting.
Because it
was a holiday, but it was also my birthday. So that's my favorite thing about spring. How about you?
That's good. I like things about spring. My favorite thing is, we were just talking about this before we started recording, and there's so many good things to like. How can I just pick one? Okay, I really like the flowers coming up, but I like the trees budding the best. When you can see them go from sticks to buds to tiny little leaves, that's my favorite.
So beautiful.
It is beautiful.
I'm ready. Ready All for right. spring.
Me too. I thought you were ready for my first question. Oh, well, are you ready for that?
I'm ready for that too. What's your first question?
Okay. My first question is from James at our Caledonia branch. And the question is, do animals have friends? Do they have friends?
Do they? I think so. I think they do.
We'll see. Well, first I want to recognize that friends, the vocabulary term, is a human term, and it doesn't usually apply to animals. And there isn't really a term. It's not really a term that scientists who study animal behavior likely use. Mm-hmm. However, there are examples of animal interactions that, from our human perspective, we would call friendships. Mm-hmm. I have 3 pets, and though I see them interact daily, I actually would not call them friends, any of them.
They're roommates.
They are enemy roommates. Before this set of 3 pets, we had a different set of 3 pets. We had 2 cats named Neo and Champ, and we had a very dorky dog named Tank.
Aww.
And I would have said that Neo and Champ were friends, and that Champ and Tank were friends, but that Neo and Tank were not friends.
Aww.
In fact, every time Neo would sit on chairs, and every time Tank walked by, she would just smack, 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 smack.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. Tank was really dorky, though, so he would just be like, oh, okay. But Champ,
I probably deserve
it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Champ and Tank would play, and when they weren't playing, Champ would like walk in between Tank's legs and nuzzle up to his face, and I would describe that behavior as friendship. This type of friendship behavior that can be observed in both domestic and wild animals. And you've talked this about this before, Liz, like with the deer and the wild turkeys playing together.
Yeah, watching out for each
other. Exactly, helping each other detect predators. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk more about what animal behavior scientists, who are called ethologists, I'm going to talk more about what they study, but I want to give this one proof for animal friendship that they've observed. Animal behavior does not have a firm conclusion. They haven't decided if animals can love. However, it does seem that they form attachments, and here is the evidence for this. Animals grieve when another animal's die.
Oh.
Whales, dolphins, horses, cats, dogs, rabbits, elephants, monkeys, and chimpanzees have been among the animals observed sitting motionless, not eating, withdrawing all by themselves after the loss of a family member or a mate. I wanted to give this sad evidence up top so that we could continue with more happy evidence of human friendship. I know, it's very sad. Scientists don't really know why interspecies friendships form, but they do have some ideas of why they might. Domestic animals like my cat and dogs typically form friendships because they're just close to each other and because of their proximity to their people, who they also form attachments or relationships to. They're just around each other, so they just hang out. But that doesn't really explain the relationships that we see with animals out in nature or sometimes in the zoo. Generally at zoos, they try to keep their environments as natural as possible, so they're not putting them in a scenario like my cat and dog at home. Believe me, there's some interesting observations in nature and at zoos, and I'm going to share a few of those at the end. Another idea, besides just being close to each other, that scientists have about interspecies friendship is interspecies communication. Different species of monkeys in particular seem to be able to communicate warnings to each other. Another theory that scientists have is mutualism. Mutualism means that two different species exchange benefits with each other. So I'm thinking, again, Liz, about your deer and turkeys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they play together, but they also, deer and turkeys, have different adaptations that allow them to see or hear predators differently from each other. So together, they are more protected against predators. So that's one thing that scientists see in nature, is different species working together to some mutual benefit. And the last theory, which honestly just sounds like the word friendship to me, but scientists just don't use that word to talk about animal behavior, is social bonding. Scientists have observed animals seeking out other species for play. They just want to play with other animals. And play is a term that the scientific community uses around animal behavior. All right, now I have a whole bunch of specific examples of animal friends. There was a horse, a domestic horse, who made friends with a wild turkey. He would lean way down and let the wild turkey hop up on his back. And then they would just let him sit up there.
I love animal friendship videos. I really do.
It's so interesting that a domestic animal and a wild animal could be friends too. So there was also a case of domestic animals where a ram and a blind cow became friends. The ram would always make sure that the cow could get around without bumping into things, like protect and make sure, mm-hmm. here's where we're going, friend. And every day the ram would eat all of its meals right next to the cow.
Aww.
Then the cow had a baby calf, and that same ram showed that protective behavior to the baby. This is my friend's baby.
So sweet.
I know. Okay, this is a really interesting one because so far we've talked about animals that are equals, but this is a story of a predator and a prey becoming friends, okay. Which does happen mm-hmm. in nature. And that is a case where scientists are like, oh, we don't really know. Coyotes are known to hunt badgers, but there are cases where coyotes and badgers will work together to hunt squirrels. Poor squirrels. They don't get in on the friendship here. Coyotes will try and play with the badgers by doing the play bowing. You probably can picture that if you have a dog. It's just like how a dog will play mm-hmm. bowing and wagging their tails. Badgers, that they do not play like that with other badgers, but they will respond to that behavior with the coyotes.
If they don't play with them, they might get eaten.
I mean, there is a weird power dynamic between a coyote and a badger, but it doesn't seem like right. that. They're hunting squirrels together, and then they're playing, and then they've even been observed resting together and even having their bodies touching after the hunt.
That's kind of sweet,
it
too.
It is. Just hopefully the coyote doesn't get hungry. Okay, last animal story. There was a miniature horse and a farm goose who were rescued together in Pennsylvania. The horse had an infection, so it was sick, and it was being cared for by a veterinarian. But the goose was very protective of his friend, and he would shoo away the veterinarian when he came to treat the horse. He tried to chase him away with his wings.
Oh, geese.
Yeah. So they had to be rescued together because they were friends. So I would say, yes, animals have friends, even though that isn't a word that scientists use, friendship. They bond. They have social bonding, which again, to me, sounds just like they're friends.
They're friends. Aw, I love that.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. And I have a fact of the day today that is also about animals. Yeah. And this is a very interesting book. It is, it's just made for us, I think, Liz. Yeah. It's a fact of the day book. It's 513 weird facts that every kid should know. This is in the curious section of our nonfiction. It is. Yeah, it's brand new. And it's got, it's just got little facts throughout the whole book. That's all it is. It's just little
delightful
squares
illustrations on the cover.
With facts and delightful illustrations inside as well. So here is my fact. It is about elephants. How careful is an elephant's trunk? It's a good question. As well as uprooting trees, an elephant's trunk can perform delicate operations such as plucking a single blade of grass from the ground. I know.
That's bananas.
I did not know. And there's an illustration here of a elephant giving flowers to another elephant. Obviously, they're friends.
They do look like friends. Wow.
All right, Liz, okay. You got a good question for us today?
I do. Let's see. What do I have? Okay. This question comes from Kate, who is 11 years old, and she uses the Gaines Township branch.
Ooh.
Shout out to Gaines Township. Kate asks, how do bubbles work and why are they always round? That's a great question. I have to say my favorite thing at, I do baby time here at our library and I do an outdoor story time in the summer is the bubble machine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use a bubble machine at
Absolutely.
Your library?
I do.
There is just something magical about seeing bubbles floating through the air, and
there is.
Everyone loves them. Babies love them. Kids love them. The grown-ups love them.
Dogs love them.
Dogs love them. My dog loves bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
But don't catch bubbles on your tongue. Do you have to tell children at your story times not to catch them? I feel like I have to say it every
time. I actually
time.
Just don't
oh.
say it.
It tastes gross.
You just learn it by taste.
It's not going to hurt you, but it tastes gross. So, anyway, so first we'll talk about surface tension. We're going to talk a lot
Ooh,
about
this sounds really sciencey.
It is sciencey. So water molecules, we're going to talk about water first, really like each other. And they form what's called surface tension. So if you had just a bucket of water, you might see like a tiny little bug on top of the water. Have you seen that
yeah,
before?
Yeah, I have. Uh-huh.
It's not heavy enough to disrupt the surface tension between the water molecules. They really want to be together. So those water molecules are strong. They're so strong that something is lit like a little bug can walk across it and not disrupt that surface tension. However, soap molecules are really different. When you add soap to water, the soap molecules sandwich the water molecules. That's soap and water sandwich.
Yeah, that doesn't that sound frame. Very no. tasty.
So each soap molecule has two ends, and one end is hydrophobic, so it doesn't like water.
Okay.
And the other end is hydrophilic, so it wants to stick to the water. So the two hydrophilic ends sandwich the water molecules, and the two hydrophobic ends try to push away. But the hydrophilic ends are trying to pull together, so they make like a sandwich, and the water's in the middle. It's icky sounding, but that's what makes the soapy film on. And like if you had a bucket of water and put some soap bubbles in it, you would see kind of that film on top.
Uh-huh.
And if you blow air into it, like with a bubble wand, the film stretches out and traps the air, which makes a bubble.
Okay.
Did you know that a soap bubble film, so if you blow a bubble and you see it floating there, that film is 10 times thinner than a human hair? It's a trivia
oh.
fact for you.
Okay.
So
you couldn't hold a quarter pounder with that.
You could not. Bubbles might pop if you yeah. poke them and release the air. Or sometimes they float and float and float until the water that is trapped inside that soap sandwich evaporates.
Oh.
And that makes your bubble pop. If
okay.
it's, and the air temperature can affect if it's colder in a room. Sometimes the bubbles will stay together longer
okay.
than if it's warmer because that warm air causes the water to evaporate faster.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
And they're so beautiful, too.
They're so beautiful.
Have you noticed that bubbles have kind of an iridescent color to them?
Yeah, I have.
When light waves hit the bubble's surface, they reflect and interfere with each other. So we've talked about how we see colors before, and it's just like that with soap bubbles. It depends on the thickness of the bubble, the thickness of that outer layer of the bubble. Bubbles have an inner and outer layer, and both layers can reflect light. Some light waves bounce off the inner and outer surfaces, and some pass right through. A bubble might reflect pink or blue or green or any combination of colors depending on how thick that surface layer of soap is at any given time and what other light waves are being reflected at that time. Sometimes they cancel each other out and you can't see either one of them. It's interesting. But why are bubbles round?
I don't know.
Oh, gosh. It's all about science. If you have a bubble wand that is square shaped, do you blow square bubbles?
No.
No, you don't. You're
kind
right.
of a longer circle.
So bubbles are sphere shaped because spheres are the strongest geometric shape.
Oh.
Soap and water sandwich is trying really hard to stick together. So a sphere is the most efficient way for it to do so. Spheres have the least amount of surface area for their volume. So for the air that's inside. That's the smallest and strongest shape it can form. The surface tension of the soap pulls together to make that sphere. At the same time, air molecules inside the bubble are pushing outward. Air molecules on the outside are pushing inward. And the bubble is just trying really hard to prevent any air from getting in or out. So it forms a sphere.
Okay.
Because spheres are strong. Even if you have a different shape wand, you're still going to blow round bubbles. But, Liz, you say, I know I've seen square bubbles before. I've seen them too. So I did some looking around and I found a really cool experiment you can do at home, which I will link in the notes, where you can make a cube out of straws and pipe cleaners and dip it into soap and water and produce a square bubble. But it's not the same as blowing a bubble like you would blowing air through a typical bubble wand. This is different, but it is possible. Also, if you add a little glycerin to your solution, you can find that in craft stores or in like pharmacy type stores. It prevents the water from evaporating so quickly. Because once a bubble touches your hand, the dirt and the oil on your skin, even if your hands are clean, it's going to break that surface tension. But if I watch lots of cool videos, if you wear a little cotton glove and you add a little bit of glycerin to your solution, you can bounce a bubble without popping it.
Whoa.
And make some really strong. Oh my gosh.
That's cool.
It was really cool. Who knew bubbles were so scientific?
Yeah.
I found a lot of cool videos of bubble science online, like so many videos. I saw frozen bubbles. You can blow bubbles when it's cold outside. Colored bubbles, giant bubbles. I saw really cool, and it was something you could do at home with a dowel, a long stick with a rope attached to it, and they were blowing giant bubbles out in their yard. It looked so cool. So maybe you can do your own bubble science experiments this summer or even in the winter, because you can do it in the wintertime too. Yeah,
blow frozen bubbles.
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. It was fascinating, me as an adult, watching people do science with bubbles. It was incredible.
Oh, so, bubbles are really cool.
They really are. So I hope you learned a lot about bubbles, Kate, and maybe you can do your own experiments in the summertime. So bubbles, super strong. Who knew?
Not me.
All right. Well, I have a book to share with you today,
too. Tell me about it, Liz.
Well, Jill, now we were chatting about this earlier, and you actually brought the book with you. Can I see it a second?
Let me get that book out.
This book is amazing. It's called The Eyes and the Impossible by David Eggers, and it won the Newbery, which is pretty prestigious here in the library world. But it is a really cool, it's cool because it's kind of a different shape.
It is.
You know, it's square.
It's kind of heavy.
It's heavy. Yeah. The pages are really heavy. But, all right, we've talked about how I feel about talking animal books before.
I was shocked that you were going to talk about this book because I loved it.
I don't typically like them. They're not my favorite. But I started listening to the audiobook of this, The Eyes and the Impossible, and it's narrated by the actor Ethan Hawke, and it was incredible. If you are an audiobook listener, I highly recommend it. So, this story is narrated by a dog named Johannes, who runs free in what seems to be a park. We don't really know in the beginning. There are other animals he encounters, such as a trusty bird named Bertram and a feisty raccoon named Angus, who is very proud of his opposable thumbs, and he talks about it a lot. He also mentions several times that the ducks are smelly and untrustworthy, which all of the other animals agree with, so... Johannes's job is to be the park's eyes and report what he sees to the three bison that live in a large enclosure. Johannes is very fast, like rocket speed, and really has no sense of time whatsoever. He figures he's been living in the park for thousands of years. You really don't know. There are lots of adventures happening in the park every day. There's an art exhibit being installed, and Johannes is absolutely transfixed observing the artwork. There's a chapter or two of kind of danger and peril as he gets leashed and captured by some not-so-friendly people. But rest assured, he gets away. It was just kind of a scary moment, and thanks to the cooperation of his animal friends. We also see how Johannes views the humans who visit the park, for better or for worse, and it makes you think about how we interact with nature and how that affects the animals. The biggest adventure is Johannes's plan to free the bison from their enclosure. He thinks all the animals should have room to run free, so he makes a very tricky plan to give them their freedom. And it is hilarious, and it works. Thanks to a lot of helpful goats and horses, too. But in the end, do the bison really want to be free? Maybe, maybe not. I checked out the physical book to go along with the audio because there are beautiful two-page illustrations to accompany the story. There are landscapes that feature Johannes running and jumping and frolicking. It was delightful. And this is coming from someone who doesn't really like animal books. It's mostly funny. It's imagining the escapades and narrow escapes that these animals find themselves getting in and out of throughout the story. It's about the family we make, even though it might seem a little bit different. And also depending on that family when the going gets tough. And also, Johannes can run extremely fast. Did I mention that? Because he mentions that many times in the book. It's available in print, ebook, and I highly recommend the e-audio. It would be an awesome choice for a family road trip to listen together.
It would be.
The Eyes and the Impossible. Okay.
Wow.
That's it.
That's great. What did we learn today?
Wow. What did we learn today? I learned a lot about... animal BFFs, of course, but also your fact of the day about elephants plucking a single blade of grass was fantastic.
Oh, that's wild. That's a wild fact.
It's hard to picture.
I know, because they're so big.
Right, but they're dexterous.
Yes. Oh, maybe he was picking her those flowers because he was feeling sad for her because she was grieving the loss of somebody.
Oh, chill. What a downer.
I know, but, you know, elephants feel deeply.
What did you learn today?
Oh, I learned a lot about bubbles. I really never thought about them as scientific things. But then as soon as you started talking, I was like, oh, bubbles are so scientific.
They really are. Yeah.
I think it's really interesting that spheres are the strongest geometric shape.
They are.
I like that.
Super strong.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. All right. I guess that is it for us today. Thanks for all of your amazing questions and helping us learn more about our world, too. For more information or to send us your own question, head to kdl.org/stump. Tune into the next episode where we answer even more of your questions. Huge and special thanks to the KDL Programming Department, the KDL Marketing Department, and JD Delinsky for our intro and outro music. Thank you.